How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunchberries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. He's John Littlefoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunchberry.
No!
No one steals my Crunchberries.
I think you mean my Crunchberries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
Today on Sticks In, we look back at the weekend in Charlotte for the PLL, week two of the regular season. We go through the games, the epic performances, you know exactly who I'm talking about, and a little bit more. Plus, another interview today. Chaos netminder Austin Kaut joins the podcast today, talking career from Springfield Delco to Penn State to the MLL and now to the Chaos, cover a whole lot along the way. And of course, we had to ask about Cleatgate. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you'll find out. If you are enjoying the podcast, please do leave a like, subscribe, download, all that good stuff. Share it with your friends. I appreciate you doing that. Thank you for coming back. Let's do it. Welcome back to Sticks In. My name is Dan Arestia. I'm glad you're here. Week two of the PLL season is underway. Four more games down. These all took place in Charlotte, down in North Carolina. They were played at American Legion Memorial Stadium, former home of the Charlotte Hounds and now home of the Carolina Chaos. Stadium itself, I thought, looked great. The Chaos colors lend themselves well to this kind of thing. The red and black, I thought, popped really well. I thought the brand in the end zone, the big scorpion in the end zone on one end of the field, I thought that looked awesome. I thought that looked really good on TV. I think you got to love, I talk about it a little bit with Austin Kaut here in a bit, but you have to love these fans that showed up, man. That Red Legion section was bonkers. I think Carolina really is, I think it's safe to say we are beyond the up-and-coming tag that you kind of, lacrosse likes to give to basically anywhere that's not like Baltimore and Long Island. It's an up-and-coming hotbed, or it's a new hotbed. Carolina's just a hotbed, man. Massive youth tournaments there this weekend. Kids from the area going to top-tier schools. You saw Colby Bars at Towson, who's a Carolina guy, out there for the Archers this weekend. They are not far behind these more historic blue blood-type regions in terms of the talent they produce. They really aren't. Carolina is really a great market for the sport right now. And I think the support that you see there for the PLL, but for, I think as you saw from their fan section, for their home team in general, it's a sports crazy town that loves lacrosse. So I thought it was a very good weekend crowd wise and all that. I don't know what attendance was. I took a look, as I usually do, at like the Ticketmaster seat maps on like the day before the game, sometimes the morning of the game, just to kind of see what's still available. And the place looked pretty close to a sellout. If it was a sellout, I believe PLL would have said so, but it looked pretty close to being sold out. So very good showing, I think, down in Carolina. To the games themselves, look, there's one place you got to start, the story of the weekend. Denver 18, Archers 17 in overtime. The Brennan O'Neill game. I mean, it's the Brennan O'Neill game. Brennan O'Neill could retire tomorrow and move to Outer Mongolia, never to be seen again. People will still be talking about this performance years from now, decades from now. I don't think I'm overhyping it there. The game did not start well for Denver. Fair. They were down 7-1 after the first quarter. Had a whole lot of people, myself included, saying, I think this one might be over. Utah too good. Denver too young. Figuring it out. Forget it. Forget it, man. I even posted the GIF of the train wreck and just captioned it Denver. When it was 7-1, I did that. And I will say, whenever I post something like that, I wondered to myself before I hit send, I really do think about it. Could this come back and embarrass me for sending this? I was like, no way. 7-1, this is over. Well, Denver goes on a 4-0 run in the second. They shut out Utah in the second quarter. Out of halftime, Archers get their groove back. They score 7 that quarter. Archers are leading 14-7 going to the fourth quarter. All right? 14-7. A 7-goal lead. Mike Sisselberger and Brett Dobson. That's enough to beat anyone for 12 minutes in a lacrosse game. Apparently, except for Brendan O'Neill. He had 7 scores in the fourth quarter alone, including the one that tied the game at 17, I think, and the eventual game winner in overtime. And there were just straight up force of nature moments to the performance. O'Neill takes a shot from range. It gets ruled a 1-pointer because his toe was on the line. He gets the ball back and just same move, same shot again. This time make sure he's behind the line and drills a 2. The 2 were 14 seconds apart. He hit a 14-yard one, thinking it was a 2-pointer, gets ruled a 1, and then Luke Wehrman, who was off the charts good against Mike Sisselberger, wins the ball back, and Brennan says, let me take that one more time. Let me get that again. Carbon copy, and this time he makes sure. 2-pointer this time. There was no stopping this man. I had never seen anything like it. And I asked Sudo about it after the game. Have you ever seen anything like that from an individual performer? Sudo's been coaching pro lacrosse for, God, he became Rattlers coach in what, like 2010? And he said, no, never. On social, I think people were comparing it to John Grant Jr. in the sense that I don't think Jr. and Brennan are actually similar players. Well, maybe it's a different discussion. But the comparison was when Jr. got the ball, if you were the defense, you knew he was getting to the goal. You just knew it. All you had to do was just hope he missed. And that's what it kind of felt like watching Brennan. In that fourth quarter, it was like, just get the ball to him. And then if the defense is just kind of like, let's just hope he misses. I don't know. Yes, it's week 2 of the regular season. The game was special. It was different. It was not a typical game. I know it's a regular season game early in the year, and in the grand scheme of things, in terms of like going to the championship and all that, it probably isn't going to mean a ton. But it was a special game. It had everything. You had the heroics for Brennan O'Neill. You had a crowd in Carolina going absolutely ballistic for it. I thought Anish and Boyle were perfect on the call for it. The game was speaking for itself, but they were reacting with the same gusto and amazement as I'm pretty sure we were all reacting, either in the building or on your couch. I thought it was everything about the game was like masterful and perfect. Perfect. After the game, Anish said, this is the type of game that makes fans out of people. And he's right. If that's your first lacrosse game, 0% chance it's your last. You're tuning in again. Because you know the name Brennan O'Neill now. You know you got to see more of it. And I don't want to undersell. I think I mentioned him briefly, but Luke Wehrman, oh boy. Ooh, boy, Denver. If you got a face-off man who can take it to Sisselberger like that, who could play make-it-take-it against the Archers, ooh, boy. You got yourself quite the tandem. Brennan O'Neill to score at will, and Luke Wehrman to just say, I'll get it back to you in a second. Just give me a minute here. I'll bring the ball back to you, Brennan. And again, I don't mean to undersell the rest of the offense because it really is a good group. I think Graham Bundy is going to be so good. So good. But the Wehrman make it take it to an unstoppable Brennan O'Neill. My goodness gracious. I don't know what you do. And then I don't want to bring too much negativity to this, but I'm gonna forge ahead and do it anyway, I guess. It's a topic that I talked a little bit about last week, but I think it's worth revisiting. Because as Brennan was out there just gallivanting through the Archers defense and scoring at will, The takes were back. The burners were back. Sometimes the not burners were back. People put their name on it, which I always appreciated. But the takes of, see, Donowski was clueless. Brennan could have done this at Duke. He should have. He would have. They can't coach. All that stuff. First of all, Donowski can coach. Second of all, I'll repeat what I said last time. This is just the way I perceive this. From the moment Brennan set foot in Durham, anyone who had ever seen a lacrosse game had their idea of what Duke was supposed to do with Brennan O'Neill. They need to use him this way. They need to use this offensive set. They need to put him there to dodge. They need to have a pick over here. And everybody's idea was different. And I think in a way, that's a testament to Brendan O'Neill's talent and ability, because nobody was wrong. Literally anything you do with him in an offense is defensible. He's going to be great at it. He can do everything. But as soon as Duke put him out there and used him in a way that was different from whatever your idea of an offense with Brendan O'Neill is supposed to look like, this, like, you know, platonic ideal of an offense that was the one all offenses aspire to be is the one I've imagined with Brendan O'Neill in it. If Duke doesn't do that, then people chalk it up to, well, Donowski can't coach an offense. And that's absurd. It's absurd. I said it with the qualifier last week. I definitely had times at Duke where I wanted to see him moved around and do different things, but I'm a far cry from saying, like, Duke wasted the kid or anything like that. I'll also say this. Comparing what Brennan did this weekend in the PLL to what he was doing at Duke is probably not a great barometer either. Pro defense has played differently. There's a two-point line to think about. Slides can be longer since offenses, particularly Denver's this weekend, are going to space for guys like Brennan so that they can do it with people that you would never want to slide off of in a college game. Can you imagine seeing a Georgetown game this year where people were routinely sliding away from Graham Bundy because he was the help guy and he's just standing at... He's standing in this game. He's standing at 15 yards where he's, I think he hit three or four pipes in this game from 2-point range, but he's standing well in range at 15 yards and you're going to leave him. So there's nobody within 3 yards of him. Good luck. Sam Hanley getting a lot of airspace at Penn, right? No. Well, in this league, they might, because you got to be ready to slide to Brendan O'Neill. And that slide is not short because of the way the field is spaced. It's different from the way you do it in college. It just is. I think Bundy's going to be a backbreaker in the league. He's going to get a two that breaks somebody's heart and winds up on SportsCenter. I can't wait for it to happen. But look, college defense, pro defense, it's not all played the same way. Just like by the nature of the rules and the way the field is set up. It's just not quite the same thing. And the players that are out there and what they're capable of. I hope enough time passes. And in that time, we can all get away from the why didn't Duke do this exercise, because I'm going to get real tired of it if every time Brennan has a 6-point game, people get back to, see, he could have done it at Duke. Well, he did do it at Duke a bunch of times. But there's still nobody in this game who could play 1-on-6, except once in a while, it looks like maybe Brendan O'Neill. Nobody will ever correctly answer the question, why didn't Duke do this, in the mind of the person who asked the question. Just put it aside and enjoy this once in a ever player performance from a guy who looks like he can elevate the sport with performances like that, that will inspire people to watch more games. Who gives a shit if it looks like what they were supposed to do with Duke, according to you? Who cares? Almost F-bomb there. Who cares? What we're here for is Brendan O'Neill doing something that's got me standing in the living room screaming at my television, give the ball to Brendan O'Neill. More of that. Anyway, that game, I'm going to watch it again tonight now. I'm fired up. I got to see it again. This is one of those where it was like, I'm going to date myself big time here. Before the days of DVR and stuff, this is one of those when like you get to the fourth quarter and he hits that first one that's amazing. It's when you go and find something you can tape over and you pop the cassette in the VCR and start recording because you know you're going to want to watch it again. If you're old enough to appreciate that, thank you for listening and for being part of the podcast world. To the other Friday game, chaos in Redwoods. Home team won this game 12-11, so Carolina got a win in their first game. Another good performance in net from Austin Kout. And speaking of, we have an interview with Austin today. He's a pro all-star. He's a pro champ. He's a college goalie of the year. Top 7 where he is right now, all time in saves. He is the current starter and the league leader in saves for the PLL Chaos in Carolina. Let's throw it over to our...
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. He's John LeFoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
Interview with Austin Kopp. Now joining the podcast, an alum of Springfield High School, a Delco guy, All-American, Kelly Award winner at Penn State, pro All-Star, pro champion, and the man who I think last I looked said seventh all-time in the all-time saves list, and you can currently find him manning the pipes for the Carolina Chaos and leading the PLL in saves right now. Austin Kout joins the podcast. How we doing?
How's it going, Dan? How you doing?
I'm doing all right, man. Thank you for jumping on with me here.
Appreciate you having me.
So I want to start at the beginning. I think as good a place as any, but tell me a little bit about Delco, playing at Springfield High School. What was it like kind of growing up there and that area and kind of lacrosse in that part of the world when you were coming up?
Yeah, it was the best. I mean, I actually always got made fun of growing up because I actually lived in Morton, which also split between the Ridley / Springfield. But I was on the Springfield side. So when we were growing up, we tried to make it a thing that we were the 19064 crew, which was our zip code for Springfield. But my friends always made fun of me because technically my zip code was 19070. So it always was a touchy subject for me. My friends were saying, well, you're not Springfield. But at the same time, you know, growing up in Springfield, rich lacrosse culture. It was great to be a part of it. The coaches that we had in the past, the alumni that we've had, and it's a main reason why I took my wife right out of the city of Philadelphia and brought us right back to my hometown, and my backyard now backs up right to Springfield High School.
Oh, that is fun. I mean, small world maybe or whatever, but my mom is from Springfield and went to Springfield High School. And so as a kid, we used to make regular trips to Springfield because her mom still lived there and everything, and like the house she grew up in. And the sense I always got when I was there, even as a kid, was like, this is a really tight-knit community. This is the kind of place where, you know, everybody knows the neighbors and everybody here is just kind of looking out for each other.
Yeah, I mean, it's no doubt about it. I mean, I moved in and immediately both of my neighbors were in my driveway and with when the moving trucks were here. And saying, what can we help with? What can we do? Great to have you here. So, yeah, very tight-knit community, and especially when it comes to lacrosse. I mean, it doesn't get much closer when, in the winter this past summer or this past winter when the high school team's out there shoveling the elderly neighbors in our neighborhood their driveways for free as a part of community service stuff. It doesn't get much closer, and the community supports the lacrosse team through and through.
So how do you think growing up in a place like that, where it's like the team and the community and everybody is so kind of, you know, marching to the same drum, how do you think that helps shape you as a lacrosse player, like on the field? How do you take that on the field?
When you have that backing of your, you know, your township, your family, your friends, the city, it makes you want to work that much harder to be the best that you can be. And it's an unmatched feeling that you're not just some, you know, player through a high school team that's just kind of moving cattle through. There's a full-blown commitment to you as a student athlete. And the passion that this community brings towards the lacrosse team is unmatched, and it makes you want to be the best that you can be.
And, you know, it's like, I think about that and like the way you kind of talk about that and how much like that community is there. It makes sense, a ton of sense to me, beyond the geographical reason, obviously, but for you to go to Penn State after that, because Penn State is a place where, again, like, you know, Happy Valley, like the sports and the university and the people there are all kind of as one. So it was that what kind of made Happy Valley, made Penn State the right fit for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a lot of it had to do with me growing up, a young kid, not knowing what I was doing. You know, I was an attackman until seventh grade, basically. And I thought I was going to be a goal scorer. And then I ended up being the slowest person on the field. So they stuck me in cage. It worked out in my favor. But, you know, I was trained by the best to do it from Springfield, the two best to do it from Springfield, meaning in that Drew Adams. You know, Drew Adams is the all-time leading save person in PLL and Premier Lacrosse League history. And he taught me everything I needed to know. And whoever taught him was Brian Doherty, who was, you know, one of the best goalies to ever play the sport. And then Kevin Keenan as well. Kevin Keenan was a Springfield High School lacrosse alum that went and played at Penn State as a goalie. So Drew, I basically was following in Drew Adams' footsteps of I wanted to go to Penn State. Didn't work out that way to begin with. I actually was committed to Chris Bates, who is now the Archer's head coach at Drexel. He saw something in me, and I was committed to him at Drexel. And then some things changed. He was going to take the job at Princeton.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of things changed up, so it left some options open. And then you know, Penn State wasn't really like super interested in me because they had a goalie already in the class above me that they thought there was going to be their guy. So they weren't willing to, you know, take a guy in that class. And that guy ended up transferring out, and they gave me a call going into my senior year before I signed an NIL, and it ended up working out. And I literally, as soon as I got off the phone call with the coach from Penn State, I was like, it's a no-brainer. It's meant to be. It's destiny. I'm meant to go there. And it was the best thing for me in my career.
It's wild how these recruiting stories go. Like yours, like that, where it's like, I was all set to play for Chris Bates at Drexel, but then he goes to Princeton. And so Penn State's guy, you know, and it's like, it ends up with you, who was, again, like, not to just blow smoke here, but you're an all-time great pro lacrosse goalie climbing the all-time saves list. And to hear that's like, oh, and by the way, he's also a guy who, like, his senior year of high school was still changing where he was committed to play college lacrosse. You know, like Pinnell has a similar story where it was like, where's this guy? You know, he was all set to go to wherever it was, like Quinnipiac and then PG and then to Cornell. And it's like these all-time greats, even the recruiting road for them is going to be rough.
Yeah, I feel like it honestly comes down to a lot of the, you know, some of the top recruits, and I'll say this, I've been around a long time. I'm probably one of the top 5 to 10 oldest guys still left in the lacrosse league. And you see it a lot with these younger guys that just have natural talent and they're not willing to work hard. It's just a true thing. It's a true statement. And they're just not willing to work hard. And it sometimes takes the underdogs that weren't highly recruited, weren't looked at as, like, you know, the best guys in their class, and they just wanted it more. It made them be the best they could be as they got into college and worked harder than some of the guys that have talent. And sometimes, you know, that old saying that, you know, whatever it is, that it's talent that, you know, doesn't
hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard.
Talent doesn't work hard. It's exactly that comment. And, you know, I try to bring that and instill that every day that I still try to work hard. I'm still trying to get better. I mean, I'm sitting behind the best goalie in the world on the Carolina Chaos, and I still think that I could still be a starter on any other team, but I'm meant to be where I'm at right now, and there's nothing better.
And now you also played college ball in the pre-shot clock era. Not to date you or anything here, but I mean, the shot clock is still pretty new, but having kind of played under those rule sets. What kind of did you notice most, or what do you notice most about the game now that has changed in a way that maybe people don't appreciate from the pre-shot clock era?
I mean, I would say even more so, it's just the technology and mesh and sticks. I mean, as a goalie, you see the difference in the mesh and sticks types that we had in pre-shot clock era when I was in college, that guys couldn't string their pockets the way that they could nowadays with more whip, more whatever you needed to do to put a little extra zip on your stick and be more deceptive. I mean, it was a lot more of a natural shot back when I was in college. When I could read a stick, it was either coming high to low, low to high. Now guys can, you know, twist, and I mean, playing with a lot of Canadians my entire life. On the Carolina Chaos, those guys can put me in a body bag and make me on my knees. The ball just floats into the top corner, and it's just unbelievable. So, you know, the technology definitely has made a difference, as well as those guys who play a lot more possessions with the shot clock. I mean, having the shot clock, the ball's moving up and down, making the game more exciting, and it definitely is more difficult on the defensive side of the ball, being able to, you know, have to defend more possessions, but it definitely made the game more, a little bit more exciting.
Well, yeah. And so there's part of that that I've always been kind of curious about for you as a goalie. If there's no shot clock, does that feel like it puts pressure on you? Cause it's like, I have to stay locked in for maybe like a 3 minute possession, or like a 3 minute plus possession. Like there's, you know, is, do you feel like there's a risk of if they go make and take it, like we just may never see the ball because there's nothing to turn them over?
Absolutely. Yeah, it was definitely a lot of that. And that's why I think a lot of goalies nowadays are having a lot more saves. You're making a lot more saves. You're getting yeah. more goals against. But, you know, it's definitely comes down to back when I was there, teams could just, you know, hold on to the ball and wait for the best shot. Nowadays, you got to get it off in, I think it's 85 seconds in, you know, college across, which gives you 20 to get it over and really gives you that 65 seconds to, you know, actually run an offensive set. So, you know, it definitely, I feel like it gives goalies a little bit more of an advantage because you're seeing more shots, being able to stay more locked in, like you said, Dan. But at the same time, when I was there, you might not see a shot for 5 minutes, 6 minutes. Yeah. And it definitely, you know, makes you kind of think about like, hey, I got to be, you know, a little bit more in tune to what's going on to make sure I'm ready to go when the next shot comes.
And now they say, it's common point of view that I'm sure you're familiar with, is that all lacrosse goalies kind of march to their own drum. People say you're all nuts because you'd have to be to play that position. From your perspective as a goalie, what say you? Are all you guys crazy or what?
A little bit of a screw loose. My wife would say the same thing. I mean, there's a reason why I attracted her, because there was something about me, you know, and it was just a little bit different of a, you know, wavelength or a brain length there. But, you know, at the same time, as we are all nuts to stand in there and take those shots, I mean, the adrenaline, if it was any person out there, you know, the adrenaline takes over and it would be able to do it. But at the same time, you know, we pride ourselves on being that different breed of person that can, you know, stand in there on any given game day and see the shots, save the shots, and, you know, eat a couple off the body if we need to.
Right, right. So after Penn State, you get drafted in the third round, taken by the Cannons, I believe, in a draft that I think is widely considered. I know this year was like the greatest draft and all that. That 2014 draft is one of the best in pro lacrosse history. For the folks who maybe weren't watching as much lacrosse that or don't know, you went in the third round, and so did Miles Thompson. That's how talented that draft was. You and Miles Thompson were still available in round three in a draft that I think had like Schreiber and Jordan Wolfe and like Earhart. It was unreal. But I think that draft took place in Philly too, if memory serves.
It did. It did. And I was sitting at home with my parents, you know, watching the screen, hoping my name got picked. And I believe that I was the first goalie to go off.
You were the first goalie taken,
19th overall, and to the Boston Cannons. And it was a dream. You know, I was, you know, looking at my parents saying like, this is what I wanted my whole entire life. This is what you've you know, supported me in my whole entire life, working super hard to try to get there. And, you know, we finally did it. We got here and, you know, I've made it to, you know, the MLL at the time. And it was a humbling experience. And, you know, it was a great first year of my career where I got to play with some of the greats, with, you know, Max Seabold and Mitch Belisle and Kevin Buchanan and the Ryan Boyles, who's still around. And I talk about Ryan Boyle with it all the time of, remember the young, dumb rookie that came in and, you know, thought he was hot shit and you got to light him up at practice, but he was in there taking shots. So, you know, Ryan was a great friend of mine during that season. The Kyle Sweeneys, I mean, it was the legends of the game that were on that Boston Cannon team. And Kyle Sweeney, another Springfield guy. Keep bringing it back to that Springfield connection. But, you know, it was a very humble experience to get drafted by the Cannons back then.
And there, you know, you kind of mentioned how long you've been doing this, but there aren't a ton of guys left who can say that they really played like a meaningful amount of time in the MLL and have been there for every season of the PLL at this point. So for you, what has that ride been like from coming in 2014 through the, whatever it was, 5 years of MLL ball before the PLL gets launched? And then, you know, you move over after, I think you came over with that kind of second wave of guys.
Yeah, it was. It's definitely different. I mean, it was the games of the MLL days were 15-minute stoppage clock.
Yeah,
quarters that were basically 2-hour-long games that took forever. I mean, it was a grind back then. And guys, I don't even know. I wasn't even running around, and I was exhausted by the end of the game. So I don't even know how the midfielders and the attackmen and all those guys in the defensemen were doing it. But it's been definitely a different and a good, you know, to see where lacrosse has come, professional lacrosse has come from and to where it is now. It's definitely a great switch up. You know, it's really making sure that we can try to mold the future of professional lacrosse and make sure that guys can make it a full-time position and really commit themselves to it instead of what it, you know, what it used to be as you know, a great hobby as well as, you know, just a passion for a lot of us.
Right. Right. And so I think there's a lot of differences obviously between the two that are like immediately obvious to me or to people as fans, where it's like, obviously you guys in the league are being marketed in a much better way. There's a much bigger presence on social and all that kind of stuff and getting in front of people. But for you as a player, are there differences between the two that maybe fans and stuff like don't realize or don't really appreciate just how important the shift has been for you guys again as players?
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, the marketing piece is unbelievable. I mean, I don't even think fans knew who we were back when it was, you know, the old school professional lacrosse leagues. It was basically only the top 10 guys. Now fans and everybody know who are, you know, 1 through 19 on every team. And it's basically the best 20 lacrosse players on 8 teams throughout the entire world that are on these teams. And every fan knows every player on every team. And it's unmatched. I mean, the Premier Lacrosse League does a great job of making sure that the fans are engaged in the full experience of game day, preparation, and everything to make sure that you feel like you're involved in a normal daily basis of a professional lacrosse player.
And so now you're with the Chaos. What do you like most about playing for Towers and for Hanford as the DC?
Coach Towers is unmatched. I mean, I tell the story all the time that when I was coming over in that second wave of players, when everything merged into one Premier Lacrosse League, you know, I was waiting for my name to be called, was very nervous. It was 2 days before the final deadline of rosters, and Andy Towers gave me a call and said, you know, hey, Austin, how's it going? You know, heard a lot about you from Brian Doherty, heard a lot about you from, you know, Blaze Riordan, and wanted to just, you know, talk through, you know, what your expectations are and wanted to see if you wanted to come to training camp. I said, Coach, I don't care what you say. I don't care what you have to say. I'm in. I want to be there. It doesn't matter what my role is. I've been around this league long enough that if my role is a backup, that's what I'm meant to be. If I'm a starter, that's what I'm meant to be. And he legitimately straight up said, hey, we're going to bring you on. Blaze Riordan is our starter. unless something tragic happens, going to be his backup, and that's your role. And I said, I will take it full on, head on, horns on, doesn't matter what it is, and I will be his backup to the full capability that you need to be. And I was ready for it. So, you know, it's been an honor, and having Hanford, you know, as our defense coordinator, is an awesome coach. Players love playing for him, and the team that we have, the team camaraderie we have is unmatched. I mean, it really is. I feel like we're the closest locker room in the Premier Lacrosse League, and I really don't believe there's a closer locker room.
So I feel like people see Towers and they see basically just the guy that's on, that they show on TV or like on social, which is like this obviously enormous, but loud, larger than life, like big personality, but they probably see him as like this rah-rah kind of coach. Do you think he gets appreciated enough for how good of a tactician and a roster builder he actually is?
No, I don't think he does. I think it's undervalued, which I'm okay with, because people just see him as the rah-rah guy, but we know that he has that tactical aspect of it in the background, and he literally builds the roster based upon what he thinks is best pieces to put us in the best situation to win on game day. And it goes unseen, and we love it because we see it. So I don't care what everybody else thinks, but we know that he's one of the best out there.
Yeah, like I see him, you know, the early years, the first couple of years, he's the guy who's starting to, all right, I'm going to leak my poles over the midfield line to hunt twos. He's the guy who's appreciating, all right, the shorter field lets me do this. I'm going to do it, while other people were still trying to sub like it was still the MLL. And then he's like, all right, I'm going to bring in a ton of box guys, because now you really can't prepare to play me. Nobody else has as many box guys as I do that are as skilled as mine, so you can't really get a good scout. And now he's kind of changing things up again. All right, I'm going in a different direction with my midfield, but I have a lot of guys who can all play in different spots, and getting ready for it is hard. It seems like his thing is always, I'm just going to build a team that you just cannot prepare for, that you just can't like get yourself ready to play.
100%. He has done a great job of molding to what the team needs in order to be successful on game day. So if it was originally, like we said, you know, 10 box guys on a field that nobody has any idea how to cover, they can still beat guys one-on-one, that was the success story. Now it's, you know, he thinks that it's the changing molding of, you know, whether it's speed with a mix of a little bit of the box that you still can't understand how to cover with the ton of speed that we added this year as well. And he is a tactician when it comes down to understanding what the team needs and on the defensive side of the ball, the offensive side of the ball, in cage and at the faceoff X. So he is unbelievable at understanding what he needs and executing that.
Yeah, the speed, particularly this past weekend, the speed is tougher. I mean, I know I looked at the matchup you guys had in that first game on Friday, and I was looking kind of at like at California's defense and then what you guys were going to put on the field. And I was like, their defense looks like they want to bruise people and get in street fights. And I don't know how effective they're going to be against like a team that's going to have a Minicus and Ross Scott and Jules and Josh all on the field at the same time. You know, it's just tough to handle that.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, the some of the rookies that we added with Ross Scott and then in the midfield with Shane Knobloch, I mean, those guys are unbelievably speed and skilled players that we just added to an already very deep roster, and then adding, you know, Sergio Perkovic and Jules Hennenberg in the offseason to the already, you know, core group that we already had as of last year, just made us even more well-rounded. That just makes our team very dangerous.
And so we kind of mentioned that you had the first game Friday, you had a game Saturday. You guys were the homecoming team there in Carolina. And, you know, it's like last week I talked to Xander Dixon from the Atlas, because I wanted to understand about the homecoming weekend. And he had said running onto the field the first time with like the stadium done up in the colors with the flags and all that was when it really hit him. We are the home team. Did you have the same kind of experience?
100%, because we have the Red Legion. I mean, yeah. The Red Legion down in Charlotte, which used to be a fan of the Charlotte Hounds. They were the Hound Legion.
Yeah.
Now they are the Red Legion with the Carolina Reaper out there chirping guys on the other team, banging that drum. You really feel the atmosphere, and it was electric. It was electric that there was probably 3,000 to 5,000 fans on both sides of the stadium filling up that bowl, and it was an atmosphere to, you know, hope for, and it was unbelievable. You truly felt it when the opposing team goes out, they get boos, and you come out and you get cheers. That's when you know you're in a home stadium.
I was going to say that the Red Legion, man, that support section on TV, it looked like a bunch of psychos. I'll be honest. Like the Reaper, he was wearing different colors on different days. I was like, how many outfits does the Reaper have?
They are an elite fan base. They are unbelievable. I've met a lot of those guys over the years, and they love it. They are super supportive, and it is awesome to have them on our side.
Yeah, I talked to Michael Harris once in a while. He's got the drum, and I saw him. He took the Hound sticker off. They gave him the Carolina sticker to slap on there. He's pounding the drum. So I guess now that you've kind of you've had it both ways. You were a home team with the MLL. You did the tour with the PLL, and now you're back to being home team with the PLL. Are you feeling pretty excited to kind of be attached to a home market again?
Yeah, it really is. It's good to have your home base somewhere, even though we're still, you know, semi-tour based and kind of bouncing around. To be able to have your, you know, brand attached to a city and have fans that truly, you know, have an interest in you from a certain home city is unmatched. It's different than just having a tour base where you have certain fans in certain cities and everybody loves everybody. It's good to have your brand of lacrosse associated with that home city that gives you that support on game day.
And so what has it been like now for you these last 2 weeks? Because, you know, week one, you step in mid-game, but then you get the full week of preparation for a doubleheader. So it's like two very different, it seems like, modes of preparation and experiences. How has kind of those been going for you? How's that been different? What's it been like?
Yeah, it was great. I mean, the week one, you know, through training camp and into week one, it was no different. I mean, I was, you know, Blaze's backup. Blaze happened to have a weird, quirky injury in the second quarter, and it's my job to be ready to go in any given notice. So I was ready to go, hopped in there, started off slow, finished strong, and we got our first win. And then, you know, when Blaze wasn't fully ready and prepared to go this weekend and I found out that I was going, you know, both games, it was any normal week. I had my normal preparation. I don't change any sort of preparation even when I'm Blaze's backup, you know, because I have to be ready to go. So why change any sort of preparation? So preparation was still normal, locking myself in, turning the out of office on the real job and focusing in on what I am more passionate about, which is lacrosse in my career. And ready to go on, you know, Friday night, worked out in our favor. We really played really well, you know, had a good game against the Redwoods, and then not so well. Didn't get off to a hot start against the, you know, Atlas, and the credit to them. They, you know, came out flying around and just got ourselves in a hole that we couldn't dig out of. But, you know, overall successful 2-1 on the year going into Philadelphia weekend.
Yeah, you know, I talking to Xander last week, I was like, how was that second game for you? He was like, I'll be honest, like, we were tired. We were hurting. Like, we were gutting it out. Did you guys feel kind of like the same? I imagine that quick turnaround is not an easy one to make. I mean, for you, you've had a good outing every time out. You're above 50% in every game. You got double-digit saves in every game. But, like, as a group, are you feeling in that second game? Are you feeling it pretty hard in the legs and everything?
I mean, I'm definitely feeling it. I got hit with balls in the shins, the thighs, the knees, the arms. And at my age, my recovery isn't as good as it used to be. So I'm definitely feeling it. So I can 100% vouch for every one of my teammates that is running around, playing defense, you know, running up and down the field and playing offense and getting beat on by, you know, defensemen. They were definitely feeling it. But, you know, it's definitely a good – it's our first time having that doubleheader in, you know, PLL history. So, you know, it's definitely a learning experience of trying to be able to handle that adversity and try to come out with two wins in a weekend. But yeah, it was definitely a tough experience, and didn't work out in our favor on the second day, but we'll work through it coming through this weekend.
I think you have the Archers this weekend. I think you and the Chaos right now, I think, have the league's best save percentage. I think the Archers have the second best. Might we actually see a goalie duel in Philly? Might we actually get a low-scoring game?
I don't know. I mean, we'll see. I mean, you know, we come up against the Archers this weekend, and, you know, they have a high-potent offense. We have a high-caliber defense, so it's going to be a great, you know, battle on that end of the ball, especially with our offense and their defense. And, you know, the goalie battles, whether it's myself or Blaze in the cage, you know, I always consider ourselves, and Blaze and I always look at each other and say we're the two best goalies in the world. So it doesn't matter if I'm in there or Blaze is in there. We're hoping that we're going to, you know, play the best that we can and have that goalie battle, especially with Dobson, one of the younger guys in the league that's, you know, the new rising star.
I mean, a hometown game for you. It's got to be you this week, right? You got to get the nod in Philly. It's got to be you.
I would love to. You know, it's up to, you know, how it ends up playing out. And we'll see what happens this weekend and who gets that nod. But whether it's me, whether it's Blaze, it doesn't really matter. We're going to be in the best position to, you know, take that W home on Saturday night.
All right, now I need to ask about this. It was weird as I heard about it. Saturday I heard about it a little bit, and then Ian McKay, I think, accused Pac-Man Jones of maybe grabbing some cleats. But what can you tell me about Cleat Gate? Were guys really showing up to find gear missing on Saturday?
I mean, the Cleat Gate is the all-time gate of all the gates. So, I mean, it's just a weird scenario. We don't really know what happened, but there were a couple pairs of cleats missing from our locker room. And who knows whether it was, you know, Pac-Man or whether it was, you know, somebody else or the ghost of Christmas past. Who the heck knows who it was? But, you know, there was definitely some funky stuff going on down there in Charlotte.
Well, if Towers and Company ever find the guy who did it, God help him.
Oh, God help him. I mean, our coaching staff against anybody. I would take our coaching staff in a dogfight against anybody. It doesn't matter who it is.
I was going to say, like, you guys have some big boys out there. You got some big, strong guys. But Towers looks like he's still out there, you know, bench pressing cars. Like, I don't even know.
Pound for pound, best coaching staff in the league.
All right, man. We're going to get you out of here on that one. I appreciate you very much for joining me today. And best of luck to you and to the Chaos. I hope you have a great a little personal homecoming for you in Philly.
Appreciate it, Dan. Thanks for having me on.
All right, man. Thank you again.
Thanks a lot.
A thank you to Austin Kout there for joining me. You know, I think we kind of touched on it a little bit, but when I looked at that first game they played, that Carolina versus California versus the Redwoods game, again, I kind of looked at that. I said it before, like in the Friday show last week before the games, but I was like, man, I like the guys on that Redwoods defense. Like, there's good players down there. Chris Fake, Arden Cohen, these guys are really good. But a lot of them are guys who are looking for the leverage game, or in the past have occasionally had a hard time with the speedsters of the world, with the Grant Amonts, with the Michael Sowers. And I know it's tough to judge somebody based on how they cover Michael Sowers, but there's more and more of those guys in the league now, of those quick and shifty guys. And I see a lot of them on Carolina, man. The speed on that team with Minikus, with Scott, with, you know, Jules, with Shane Knobloch is just cooking people. You know, it's like even Kyle Jackson was just like just too fast for some guys out there. So like the speed that they put on the field, you need to be able to cover that. It's hard. It's hard to keep up with that many guys moving at that pace. So I kind of thought the Chaos advantage that they leaned on there was the one I kind of expected, which was we have guys who are going to be able to win individual matchups with quickness. Knobloch did it a lot. Scott did it too. But, you know, that's kind of how I saw that one going. And I felt like it kind of went that way. The third game we heard a bit about in there, New York and Carolina. Atlas win that one 15-12. I really don't know how many teams are going to manage the 2-0 in their homecoming weekend, man. I think that's going to be the exception and not the rule. Carolina goes the 1-1. Atlas went 2-0 in week one. But look, man, if Atlas doesn't start that game 7-for-7 shooting on an ice-cold Kyle Bernlohr, if they don't start the game exactly that way, they probably lose. They lose the game. Whipsnakes were the better team for quarters 2, 3, and 4 in that game. So, like, winning, going 2-0 in a weekend is hard. I think going 1-1 is a good result for a team playing 2 games in 2 days with 19 guys. Call it 20 guys. Both home teams now have made a move swapping one player from the 19 with a protected roster, with a reserve roster guy between the 2 games. I would bet that becomes the norm too. Guys who you need to get these guys. One is a way to get some run, but two is a way to just make sure your team doesn't totally break down with injuries. I think, for the Atlas, for me, I think the formula right now is looking pretty set, right? Teton Schellenberger are carving people up. Dixon is finishing absolutely everything. The midfield's running you over. We watch the offense cook and all that, and we kind of know that stuff. And Trevor's going to play make it, take it to them. I think a few guys do need some shine here, or one guy in particular needs some shine. Tyler Carpenter is killing it. He is absolutely killing it. There's 7 players in the PLL right now who have double-digit ground balls through 2 weeks. 6 of them are face-off guys, and the 7th is Tyler Carpenter. And he's ahead of 3 face-off guys. He's 4th in the league in ground balls. He hit a 2 in a game against the Chaos. He hit a goal, I think it was against the Whipsnakes, was his other goal. He's got 3 points on the year. He and Kobe Smith, that LSM tandem, they have combined for 7 scores right now. They've played 3 games. Every other PLL, LSM, and defenseman combined have 6 points, or 5 points even, excuse me. He had 9 ground balls against Carolina alone. Trevor had 12. Carpenter was right there with 9. On the wings, he is deadly. He is in that faceoff in the blink of an eye. And he's just been a menace. All the steal of the draft talk, the rookie of the year, all right, the rookie of the year is probably going to be Brennan, as if you gave it away right now. But all the rookie of the year talk, whoever it comes down to, Carpenter's putting himself in the conversation. I'm not saying he's going to win it. I think a poll beating out both Brennan and Connor Schellenberger and even Shane Knobloch at this point for rookie of the year would probably, as we sit here today on whatever it is, June 12th, would probably be pretty insane. But he's put himself in the conversation. Make no mistake about it. When you talk about the best rookies this year, third round pick Tyler Carpenter, whatever he was, third round, fourth round, end of the draft Tyler Carpenter, he's in that conversation. Make sure you mention his name in there. He's playing as well as anybody at the position right now. I think the trick with Atlas is it's as Marlo Stanfield used to say, one of those good problems. How do you deal with the riches? Because Costabile's going to come back from that ankle injury. Although right now you're seeing there's probably no need to rush him based on how they're playing. It sounds like the Canadian visa issues are getting close to being done. So that'll mean that Jake Stevens and Peyton Cormier are both getting ready to join this team. How do you get them involved? I don't know how you sit those guys, right? You can't. How do you get them involved? Whose place are they taking so that you don't upset what is clearly a very good thing going? Getting that cocktail right is hard when you got to make choices between guys this good. That's the challenge right now for Coach Pressler. I think he's pushed the right button so far. He's done a really good job these first few weeks. I think the places you saw last year where you would point to and say, man, the Atlas stink at this, the 2 big ones were the Atlas in the 32 and the Atlas transition defense. The Atlas are crushing offense in the 32-second right now. I wrote a little bit about it coming into week 2. Just in their first 2 games, they were awesome. And their transition defense is way better, way improved. They're much smarter in the sub game. You can see they kind of, with Carpenter, they're kind of in a hurry to get him on the field anyway, but you can sub behind him and get him on, and they cut that transition much better than they used to. So, and those two things, I mean, those two things and Jeff T playing like an alien are probably why they are where they are, and Schellenberger being as good as he's been. Like, it's hard to find a place where the Atlas are not good right now. The last game of the weekend, the Cannons and the Whips. A battle, maybe for a little while. Early lead for the Cannons. I liked what I saw from the Whips in the second quarter, I think. There was this moment, and I kind of posted about it, and then they went ice cold after. Again, God, am I bad at this. But they scored 2 goals about 30 seconds apart. The first was a Zed Williams goal, where he just bullied his way above GLE and then threw it back over his shoulder into the net. Highlight goal, and like very much the physical dodge, leverage, get low and move your man to get to your spot and score from there kind of play. And then with about 30 seconds later, TJ Malone takes it from low lefty wing, right-handed through X, attacking GLE with just straight line speed and just snaps off a shot from above the goal line and scores. Two very different ways to attack a defender and to attack a defense. And that makes a team harder to guard, right? Because if you have your matchups, we got our guy who guards the fast guys, we got our guy who guards the bruiser guys. You might be lucky to have a guy who can do both. Not everybody does. But if those matchups then get switched, you might be in trouble. If you don't keep matchups, you get the guy guarding a speedster who ends up on Zed Williams, vice versa. You don't want that. So I think, unfortunately for Whips fans, the Cannons defense handled things really well the rest of the way because they do have a guy who can do both in Garrett Eppel. The Whips went scoreless for, by my count, 22-32 of game clock. That's nearly half the game. They scored a goal late in the second quarter, and then their next goal didn't come until there were about 3 minutes left in the fourth. They added some garbage time goals, which matters for goal differential, which is important. So I guess there's no real garbage goal, because, again, if things come down to differential, and it seems like when we're doing the scenarios, they do just about every year, those goals matter. But the outcome of this game had been, had been decided, I think, at that point. Cannons get 7 points on 6 assists and a goal from Asher Nolting. An awesome game by him. Only 3 turnovers on 45 touches, which is excellent. But again, for me, Garrett Eppel, a difference maker here. It's interesting because, when you talk about defenders and matchups, usually righty-lefty is something that's considered. You don't want your lefty to guard a lefty if you have a lefty defender. You don't want your righty to guard a righty and so on. You don't really have to worry about that with Garrett Eppel. I didn't even realize it, but last year, I think it was in the Redwoods playoff game, but he talked about saying, he's like, I know it's unusual, but I like going lefty-lefty. Doesn't bother him. He enjoys it. It can be uncomfortable for a defenseman because the footwork can be a little bit awkward. You might be using a V-hold instead of trying to get your stick upfield. A lot of defensemen probably do not love doing that, but Eppel seems to have no mind of it at all. So he can be that guy who I talked about. If they got Zed, they got Malone, they got Rambo, he can guard all three, wherever you want him. And I thought he was outstanding in this game. Thought he was a difference maker for sure. I think the defense is still learning a little bit, but I mean, look, you hold a PLL team scoreless for 22 minutes, you're clearly moving in the right direction. Clearly, what Hartzell's cooking is working. Their personnel has got it figured out. They're getting used to with the new guys they have there and missing Jack Hilty, but it's working, man. It's working. Cannons also used Zach Tucci at the faceoff spot. Big news, because it's the first time they did in almost a full calendar year. First time they've dressed a faceoff man. He went 11 of 24, so good for him, because he basically split with Joe Nardella. If you can split against Nardella, you might be going to Coach Holman and talking yourself into dressing against some of the other best specialists in the league too, right? If you can go 50-50 with Nardella, feeling pretty good. Boston has Philly this week. It's a good week to dress Tucci again. Keep building that confidence, because who knows what the dogs' face-off situation is going to be this weekend. Are they going to add somebody this week? Is Stathakis ready to rejoin them? But if they go with nobody, by all means, dress Tucci again, because he can win you the ball. The Whips suddenly do, I think, to me, look like the team that's going to be at the bottom of the power rankings for now. They were at the bottom of the East, the bottom of the overall standings. Their goal differential right now is -8, which is the league's worst. I think given the retirements they had, some aging, I think I said it coming into the year, but I kind of look at them as like a team between eras. There's some torch passing, I think, that's kind of happening there, which can sometimes just be a bumpy road. They have young pieces, and you can see the promise. Malone is a star. Malone is such a star. Zupacic is going to be a star. Zapatello is going to be a star. But two tough opponents in the first two games, right? Even if it was the Atlas on the second half of the back-to-back, the Atlas are not an easy matchup. And then the Cannons are the Cannons. They're a really good team. It's a tough way to start the year, but it leaves them at 0-2. I think they are the lowest scoring team among teams who have played two or more games. So I think Krebs look good in net. statistically, the Whips, they didn't really get killed against the Cannons. Kirst was 60% in goal for Boston. Like, that doesn't help you. If you're going against a goalie and he's doing 60%, then it's a tough day, hot goalie. The Whips were in it for a while. I just didn't think they had enough of the ball at times. It's good to see Nardella back out there. I think this team really just needs Dordavik back in a big way. They really do. As a Dodger, somebody who's going to unsettle a defense and draw a slide, he was and probably would still be. Him and Chani are the two best two-point threats on that team. And when you have a legit two-point threat like that, it stretches the defense more. It makes more space. It just unlocks so many things. So I think they just, they need to get Dordavik back, and I think that'll really help them. But week 3 is on tap. I may be in Philly for it, still TBD, trying to figure that out. Maybe I'll be watching or here, we'll see. The preview show will be here on Friday, talking games for the weekend. Things for you to look for as the Water Dogs take their turn as the host and homecoming weekend, playing at Villanova. Thank you to Austin Cout again for joining me, and thank you for coming back and sticking around with me. And we'll see you Friday.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. He's Sean LaFoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 7. My trip to South Dakota was the best summer ever. Now I don't need to go to Mars, because I've been to the Badlands. And I caught a bigger walleye than Dad when we went to the Missouri River. Then I rode my bike through these huge rocks called needles. Ooh, I also saw my first herd of bison, even a fuzzy furry baby one. I can't wait to go back and see more. There's so much South Dakota. So little time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.